Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Chaf Hey. We're behind. We're back. We're all the way back now in Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. We continue with the Mishnah. We're going to finish God willing the sixth parak of Erchin today and begin a new chapter. Not only begin a new chapter, but really a new topic altogether in the Gemara and Erchin. But before we get to that bridge, let's get to that bridge. The Mishnah continues. Afa Pisha Amru. Right, the Mishnah on the bottom of Chav Gimel Amud Beis. We talked about this just a couple of days, that when it comes to Chayv Erechin, you made an Erech pledge, and you're now on the hook to pay that Erech pledge, so the Gizbar can come into your house and start taking. Take whatever they want to collateralize the obligation that you owe, and we talked about the severity of it, but nevertheless, Nosan Lo Mazim Lo Shoshin Yom. There are certain things that they're just not going to take, meaning, although they're entitled and they could be a little bit rough, and you're going to get a haircut. But there are certain things, however, that you get to keep. Number one, you get to eat for 30 days. Okay, and you think maybe a little bit longer than 30 days, but obviously the whole point of taking a mashkin is so that you'd pay. So I guess a 30 day food ration would basically be saying you have essentially 30 days to pay your obligation. Now, as far as clothing is concerned, 12 months worth of clothing. I don't exactly know what that means, but okay, 12 months worth of clothing. Yeah, right. Mita mutsas v'sandala v'tfilinlo, a bed, right, a made bed, and shoes and tefillin. So avaloli sholavanav. But that's only for you. That's not for your wife and for your children. Again, I know this is going to sound a little bit rough, and I'm well aware of the fact that that's going to be a little bit strange, that they're going to take a mashkon, including your children's, personal belongings. Okay. The point is that you made a pledge and you need to pay the pledge. If you are a professional, if you're a skilled professional, so they let you keep your tools for good reason, because you need to work and you need to earn money and, okay, you need to make a living and you need to make money in order so that you can pay your obligation. So if you are some sort of carpenter, so you're going to get to keep your two hatchets and your two saws. Okay, I may even be right about my definitions. Rabbi Lazar Omer Imhaya Ika Nosin Lo Tzimdo. If you're a farmer, so you get to keep your pair of oxen. Chama Nosin Lo Chamaro. If you're a schlepper, all right, a professional schlepper. So you get to keep your donkey. Hayelo min echam ruba min achan muat. Says the Mishnah the following. Now, you get to keep two instruments of, two of each instrument. The idea, I think, is very simple. The idea is that if one breaks, you got a backup. Okay? What if you have, I cannot believe the Mishnah is discussing it to this type of detail, but what if you have one instrument of one type and a whole bunch of other instruments of another type? So, ein omer limkor es hamruba v'likach min hamuat. So now you can't make the argument, and you can't say to the gizbar, look, right, before you start taking things, I only have one screwdriver left, okay? Can I sell, I have like about a dozen hammers, can I sell one hammer and purchase for myself a second screwdriver? So Ella, so the Mishnah says you can't do that. Meaning if you've been operating with one screwdriver, that's it. That's all you need, obviously. So they're going to take all your hammers except for two. You're going to leave you with your one screwdriver, and the fact that you wanted to get a second one, so that you cannot do. So Hamakdish Nechasav Malon Lo Tefillin, and then the Mishnah ends off by saying that if you're Makdish Nechasav, you consecrate all your possessions, it is everything, it includes everything, and part of everything is your own tefillin, your own pair of tefillin. Also going to go, and so therefore you have to buy it back. In other words, assuming you want to still fulfill the mitzvah of wearing tefillin.
How do you buy it back?
It's not a bad question. The point, I'm not sure. The point the Mishnah is making is that you, it's included.
So if you're just going to borrow money to reduce
Yeah.
Borrow.
Did you say in the beginning that tefillin is not paid for money? Sandals and tefillin. So
okay, good. Okay. The difference between the first part of the Mishnah and the second part of the Mishnah, first part of the Mishnah is mashkon, meaning what are they coming to take as collateral? Second part of the Mishnah is a person's actually being makdish everything he owns. So he's being makdish everything he owns, and so that's going to include his tefillin as well. My time in the Amakra, the top now of Chavdal and Aleph, was, yeah, what, my time. Like, in other words, what's behind this? So the imachu me'akacha, echayo me'akacha. So the Gemara says, the Pasuk says, imachuvi becomes destitute, but the word who also means let him be. Meaning, even as you encourage him to pay, but still hechayo, but you have to let him still earn a living. The word who also is a miut, because he is entitled to be mechaye, but not necessarily his wife and his children. Rabbi Elazar Omer, im haya ikar nosin lo smido, v'rabbanan hanu lav klei umnos ninu, ela nechasim ninu. Now, what the Gemara sees in the Mishnah is a machlokas, right? Because in the Mishnah starts off with a basic rule, and that is, leave him his basic necessities in order to earn a livelihood. And then the Mishnah says, Rabbi Elazar Omer, im haya ikar. Rabbi Elazar says if he's a farmer. Right, that insertion, Rabbi Elazar, sounds like that there's a implicit debate in the Mishnah, and not everyone would agree with Rabbi Elazar. Usually, we see when we see Rabbi Eliezer, sirens go off, and it basically says that's a position which we don't necessarily accept. So the Gemara says, assuming that's true, what's the machlokas between the Chacham and Rabbi Elazar? And the Gemara says that the Chachamim feel that that's assets and that's not things that are going to provide him his livelihood. Okay. And again, if I... I was going to say, if I'm in the farming industry and business, I'd understand this a lot better. Meaning, I'm with you. But apparently, maybe he could plow on his own. I'm not sure. Okay. I mean, he has a tractor, of course. So the... right. So the Gemara's question is basically, what's the Mishnah telling me that's such a chiddush? Meaning, up until now, I give the illustration of a dozen hammers and one screwdriver, and the Mishnah says that he can't, before they come in and start taking, he can't sell one of his hammers in order to purchase that second screwdriver, his backup screwdriver. And the Gemara's response is, isn't that obvious? Okay, isn't it obvious? Up until now, he's been operating with one screwdriver. Apparently, he's confident that he's not going to need a backup. So why now would you think that he's entitled to get himself a backup? So, So the Gemara says, because up until now, he has had a dozen hammers. So his thought process is, well, look, if my screwdriver breaks, so I've got more hammers than I really need. So what I'll do is I'll go to my neighbor and I'll say, look, let's barter a little bit, right? I'll give you one of my hammers, you'll give me a screwdriver. In other words, he has what to work with. But now, that's the thought process. But now he's being reduced to only two hammers and only now one screwdriver. So you might have thought, at that point in time, before you start taking things, let him stock up at least one replacement for each one of his tools. That's the Chiddush on the Mishnah, Kamash Malan. The Mishnah is teaching us that no, if he's been operating with one screwdriver up until now, that's how he will continue to operate. Okay. Gemara tells a story about a person who sells off everything. Okay. And they ask the question in front of Rav Yemar, and Rav Yemar says, yeah, take off your tefillin, right? You sold your tefillin as well. So, again, we're not talking about the prudency of the act, we're just talking about the result of the act, and the result of the act is, he sold everything includes his tefillin. Now, my kamash malam masnitzani, amakshin nechasav man lalo tefillin. So the Gemara says, Rav Yemar is not saying anything that is so earth-shattering. Meaning, after you've learned our Mishnah Erechin, you learned our Mishnah Erechin, and the Mishnah says that when a person's marich everything, when a person is makdish everything, so tefillin are included. So ma'u detei ma'asim mudasavar, mitzvah kav dina. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you could have drawn a distinction. In the Mishnah, he's being makdish. It's all going to the base of Mikdash. Okay? And so included in that is his tefillin. But look, I understand. I don't want to part with my tefillin. On the other hand, it is going to the base of Mikdash. Like, it's for a good cause, quote unquote. Again, we're not talking about the prudency of the act. We're just simply talking about the thought process of the person. But here, he's just simply selling off all of his possessions. So you could have made the argument and you could have said, look, I said I'm selling off all my possessions, but not my tefillin. My tefillin are part of my body. I wear my tefillin. So you could have made that distinction, and therefore, that's the revolutionary thinking of Rav Yemar. No, even in a sale, that includes tefillin as well. Right, as a mashkon, correct. I mentioned that point. It's a good point. I mentioned that point when we started the mashkon discussion a number of days ago, that the regular rules of mashkon allow you to take back tools that you need. The gizbar mashkon is a rougher form of collateral and collateral taking. Last mishnah of the perek. Echad amakdish chasav, echad amar chasmo, ein lo b'ksus ishta v'lo b'ksus banav v'lo b'tsevashetzav l'shman v'lo b'sandalin chadashin shalachan l'shman. A person is makdish his possessions. So certain things he just doesn't own, right? I know it's popular now to put things in your wife's name, so that way you don't own things. Here, the Mishnah, not to that degree, but the basic idea is things that are owned by your wife are not owned by you. So ein lo b'ksus ishtov, lo b'ksus banav, not your wife's clothing, not your kids' clothing, lo b'tzeva shetzav l'shman, v'lo b'sandalin chadashin shelachun l'shman. Okay, the shoes that you bought for them also. Afa pisham ravadim nimkarim b'ksusam l'shvach, shim tilakach lo ksus b'shloshim dinar m'shubach maneh, v'chein para imam tinen osa le'itlis m'shubachasi. Now, things have potentially greater value. Okay? The Mishnah gives a couple of examples. If you dress up your Eved, right? Meaning you put him on the market, but don't put him up in schlubby clothing. Put him up in really good clothing. So what you could do is you could really appreciate the value of the Eved. And all you need to do is put him in a good suit. And sometimes you'll get more of a return on the sale of the Eved than the actual investment you made in dressing him up. Or the Mishnah gives another example. The Mishnah gives the example of a cow. Para imam tinano ad le'itlis mishubachasi. In other words, buy a cow. So all you need to do is wait till the time where there is a strong market for the sale of cows. And so this cow, which is currently worth a little bit now, if we just wait a little bit longer, it could be worth a lot more. V'chein margalis emalanus olakrach. You take a jewel, and not in the small town, but you go to 47th Street, okay, Midtown, and obviously you're going to get a better price over there. Mishubachasi ein lahekdesh ela mekamo vishatam. Okay, and so the Mishnah gives us a very, very basic rule, which is we don't, whenever doing appraisals, we don't look at potential. We don't look at what it could be. In other words, and we don't ask what if, right? No what if questions, right? In general, don't ask me the what if questions. But here, in appraisals, you also can't play that game of what if, meaning everything is appraised and assessed based on its current. And what does that mean, by the way? In other words, look at Rashi. Look, when we're talking about appraisals right now, we're talking about basically looking at the portfolio of a person, meaning a person is poor, right? And we look at his possessions. And we say, well, this Eved right now is currently worth 20 zuz. Ein omrim roin kila lochin loksus b'shloshim zuz v'hu mashbiach mane. Well, all you have to do is just a small 30 zuz investment, and that Eved is going to jump up in value from 20 to 100, right? Meaning we don't do that. We don't play that game of, well, if you do this, then you can, we're not talking, that Eved is no longer worth 20, it's worth 100. And so now you could basically say, well, look, all I did was put an investment of 30 in, and now I could sell for 120. That Eved is not worth, it's worth 90. We don't do that. V'chein yitein zeh lehektesh ela fishato shamanoso. V'chein para v'chein marglis be'kfar ein shamanoso ela lefi mekoma. So Rashi explains that whenever we do an appraisal of an individual and we figure out what his net worth is, so it's that day, that time, and no doctoring up his investment portfolio. Tana Rabbanan, we end off with the Gemara, V'nasan Asa Erkacha Bayomahu, Shelo Yishem Argilas Lekalim, Kodesh Hashem Stam Ekdesh Lesabedek Abayis. So the Gemara quotes the full Braisa. We are only interested in the first part of the Braisa, which is Bayomahu, meaning on that day. That day is the most significant day in terms of appraisals, snapshot. No looking at the future. And by the way, Kodesh Hashem Stam Ekdesh Lesabedek Abayis, when your Makdash goes to Bedek Abayis, an ancillary point to our discussion, but that's the second part of the braisa. Hajalach shem hayisomim ad kan, that's the sixth parak. Okay, and now we start the seventh parak. Now we start a new chapter, and we're really starting a new chapter. Seventh, eighth, and ninth parak now, so it's real estate. It's going to be real estate from here until the end. Okay, 10 blot of Gemara dedicated to the topic of buying and selling land in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. A couple of words of introduction. First of all, we should all get more familiar with the 25th chapter of Bamidbar. Okay? So for homework tonight, I'm going to kindly request that everyone read over. It's basically Parshas Bahar, right? Parshas Bahar starts on the first pasuk of Perek Chaf Hei. There are 55 pesukim in that perek, and then it ends off with, you know, two pesukim from Perek Chaf Vav. But the prakim themselves were not. We didn't do the prakim, so we don't get faulted for that. Perek Chaf Hei and Bamidbar, Parshas Bahar. Okay. Essentially, just to give you a quick recap of the pesukim, and then we got to move ahead in the Gemara. Okay, this is it. All the agricultural laws that we're going to be learning about over the course of the next week and a half, almost 2 weeks, is really predicated on the pesukim over here, and it's based on a system of what's called Yovel. Okay, we're already somewhat familiar. Yovel operates on a 50-year cycle, but as we already know, we've seen this earlier in the Masechta, and we're going to touch on it again in just a moment. It's a question of whether it's a 49-year cycle or it's a 50-year cycle. Because we know on the 50th year, we count Yovel. That we all agree to. There's nothing to disagree with. That's the Pasuk in Chumash. What we're going to disagree with, however, is whether or not that Yovel year also counts as year one of the next cycle. Okay? But we've been there, done that. We know that Machlokas, and we're going to touch on it later today. What happens in Yovel? So the Torah describes. You get through 49 years. So now comes the 50th year. 10 days into the 50th year, what we call Yom Kippur, and we blow shofar. And it's almost like Rosh Hashanah moves on the 50th year from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. Okay? Not exactly, but we've seen that kind of language used earlier in the Masechta. It's almost like Rosh Hashanah is 10 days later. That 50th year now becomes sanctified. Ukratim Duror Ba'aretz. Freedom will be cried out through the land. L'chol Yoshve Yovel Hiti Alachem Ushatim Ish El Achuzaso V'Ish El Mishpachto Tashuvu. Everything returns back to its original owner. Yovel hishtatz ha-chamishim shanat yalachem lo tizra v'lo tiktsu es tficheha v'lo sivtsu es nizireha. And Yovel, from an agricultural standpoint, is going to be just like Shemitah. Meaning, so what you're going to have is back-to-back. You'll have a Shemitah year, the seventh year, the 49th year, and then the year following, that's Yovel, and Yovel is going to be like another Shemitah year. Ki Yovel hikodesh tiyalachem and asad etochlu es tvoasa v'shnasa Yovel azos Tashuvu ish el achuzaso. The Torah seems to be repeating itself. Everything goes back to its original owner. V'chisimkaru mimkar la misechem. And pasuk yedalad. And if you sell something, o kano miyana mitecha al tonu ish asachiv v'mispar shanim achar yovel, tikne meitha misechem v'mispar shanay tfosi macher lach. Okay, don't overcharge, don't undercharge ona'a, but rather you prorate. You know you're getting the land back in Yovel, so therefore, you're not selling the land, you're really leasing the land. Every piece of property in Eretz Yisrael is not a sale, it's a lease. And so basically all you're going to do now is figure out how many years you have till Yovel, and you prorate based on that. Lefi rov ha-shanim tar ben miknaso, ulefi ma'at ha-shanim tar ma'at miknaso, ki mispach bo tu mochalach, ulo sonu ish es amiso, v'yoretim alecha, ki ani yishem lokecha. And don't overcharge and undercharge. Although the Gemara elsewhere, was the Bab Mitzia, says that this pasuk is talking about onas devarim. Okay, for a different time. Okay, that is step one of our introduction. Okay, we're not starting here in terms of where we're going to be starting our discussion. We're going to be starting right about over here. Okay, I'm jumping ahead now to... even further. I apologize. Okay, we'll come back to it. I'm sorry. We'll come back to it. We're going to be, our parak, the seventh parak of Erchin is going to be touching on the sale of, the sanctification of property. Okay? You can consecrate your property. First of all, you have every right to consecrate anything that you own. Meaning anything that you own is yours and yours for the, to do whatever you want. And if you'd like, you can simply donate to the Beis HaMikdash. You can consecrate it. And here... we talk about the consecration of fields. Now, in the world of consecration of fields, so what we find is that the Torah basically says like this. If you want to consecrate your field, you want to be makdish your property. So, again, you have that opportunity now to redeem it and buy it back. Obviously, the whole purpose of consecrating it was just simply to provide income towards the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash now... being the owner of that field, so they know that whenever that field is going to be redeemed, it's going to be a windfall, it's going to be revenue, money owned by the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, the rules are basically going to go like this. Let's assume, for the purposes of our discussion today, that we're going to be talking about Stei Achuza. Stei Achuza means ancestral land, meaning land that you inherited from your father, which he in turn inherited from his father, so this is now Stei Achuza. If you're makdish Stei Achuza, so and you redeem it back from the Beis HaMikdash, so there is going to be a fixed formula for how you redeem it back. You'll remember earlier in the Masechta we talked about this in detail. The formula, that wasn't really detail, it was one daf of Gemara, but the formula for redeeming it back is going to be, for every core that a land produces, a core is 30 sa'ah of grain. And we're very specific, actually. It's not just grain, but it's barley. So that field that's able to produce 30 sa'ah of barley is going to be redeemed from the Beis HaMikdash for 50 shkalim. Okay, a fixed rate of 50 shkalim. But even that fixed rate of 50 shkalim is only if you're buying it back at the beginning of the Yovel cycle. Okay, when there are 49 years remaining until the next Yovel. So you're a makdish the field and let's say year one of the Yovel cycle, and now you have 49 years of this land before Yovel comes along. So the Torah says to pay now for 50 shkalim for a core of land. Okay, now what if it's not year one of the Yovel cycle? What if it's year two or year three or year 37? So what then happens at that point in time? Prorating. Now you take 50 shkalim and you prorate it, but here's the interesting thing. You don't prorate it based on 50 years because we are going to take Yovel out of the discussion. We will talk later on this morning of what if you're makdish the land in the Yovel year itself. Okay, stay tuned. That's going to be a Gemara discussion. But what if, but let's just assume right now that there are 49 years to talk about. So how do you divide 50 by 49? And the answer is not evenly. Okay? It's going to be, for every year, it's going to be one shekel and one pundayon. How much is a pundayon? A pundayon is a 48th of a shekel. Okay, so, in other words, so if you're dividing it now, it's one shekel and one pundayon for every year, so that is how we successfully divided 50 shekelim into 49 years. What do you mean you already used it? Meaning the whole reason why you're makdish is so that it belongs to them. You have a land. You have a piece of property to redeem back. Let's assume, as I pointed out, let's assume right now we're going to be discussing. Our first discussion for today is going to be stay achuza. Okay? So when you redeem it back, you're going to now just simply count how many years it is from now until Yovel. Every year now will be represented by one shekel and one pundayon, and that's how you're going to redeem it back. Okay. All so far so good. All up until we get to the point where there are only 2 years remaining until the Yovel. So if there are 2 years remaining until the Yovel, so once again, you're still good. You still get to redeem it back at a rate of, a year for every year, one shekel and one pundayon. What if it's less than 2 years remaining?
But there's a minimum to lease, right? Minimum is 2 years.
Yeah, but again, though, we're talking right now, our discussion for today is going to be talking about being makdish that property.
I understand, but if you wanted to lease it, you couldn't do it for more than 2 years, right? So it's not a possibility.
No, you could. Well, you could be makdish the property for sure. You could be makdish the property. When you sell the property to somebody else, it's got to be for a minimum of 2 years.
When you cannot lease it to get money, what is it for?
Good, it's going to be good for the Beis HaMikdash making money. Uh-huh. Meaning, it's basically a donation. But here's how the donation is going to work, though. If you're makdish it within 2 years of Yovel, so now you're going to redeem it. And here, no longer prorating, no longer based on how much time is remaining until the Yovel year. Counterintuitively, if you're going to redeem it within 2 years, you're going to have to buy it back from the Beis HaMikdash at 50 shekelim. Even though, had you done so 2 or more years prior to Yovel, you would have had a nice prorated rate of one shekel per year. But now that you're under 2 years, it's no longer at a prorated rate. It's now at the full 50 shekelim. Okay? Obviously serving as a total windfall to the Beis HaMikdash. And finally, what if you don't redeem it? Okay? So it's coming up. We're going to be talking about that later on. But if you don't redeem it, the accepted position... It definitely goes to the Kohanim. And just... Trying to ascertain whether or not the Kohanim have to pay for it. The Kohanim having to pay for it is subject to a machlokas tanaim, and I'm just trying to see what the accepted position is. Okay. We'll find a little bit later on. If you do not redeem it in the until the Yovel year, and Yovel year, you lose it, and you lose it forever, and it goes to the Kohanim, and as we'll see later on, subject to debate whether the Kohanim actually have to pay for it. So I ask you a simple question. Right, an ancestral field, can you lose it? And the answer is yes, absolutely, you can lose it. And the way you're going to lose it, and not that I'm recommending, is that you're going to be makdish the land, and you don't redeem it, and at the Yovel year, it goes to the Kohanim, and the Kohanim get to divide and distribute it. Okay? Interesting series of halachas that we're going to be discussing. I think that's it. I think, in other words, just in terms of the basics, we cover the basics. Let's begin the Mishnah. You're not makdish a property less than 2 years. Okay? The Torah says, Rashi quotes the pasuk, Al pishanim hanosarim, right? Based on the years that are remaining. As we know, we say this time and again, anytime we say the word years, we mean minimum of two, right? We assume two. So therefore, the Mishnah says that you can't be makdish a land within 2 years. Now, that seems...
From the 48th year?
No, from 2 years till Yovel. Now, it seems to contradict what I explained just a moment ago, because I told you a little bit earlier that it's that it is redeemable, and then when you, it is, you could be makdish it. It's just that when you redeem it, you have to redeem it at a higher rate. Okay, you stay tuned. V'lo goalin achar hayovel pachos mishana achas. And you do not redeem the land after yovel less than 1 year. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain exactly what that means. It's going to be a machlok between Rav and Shmuel. Ein mechashen chadashen lehektesh, aval hektesh mechashev chadashen. Now, as far as months are concerned, ein mechashen chadashen lehektesh. You don't, months don't count. In this discussion, we work with whole numbers, and when we say whole numbers, we mean years. So as far as the Beis HaMikdash is concerned, they're not concerned about months, right? Rashi explains. Look at Rashi in the Mishnah. Im revach shel hektesh hu shenach shav osa yatz yitziyash chatsi shana shiyatza ki had mefarsh lakam and da'at shal bepagad arbay mutamne di itish bos lahi yitziya havale pachos mishte shanam ufne ayova velo mifrika bigirua ela bechamishin. Rashi gives the example where, you know, year and a half is remaining till Yovel. Okay, year and a half. So you'll say, well, let's round up. Let's not call it a year and a half. Let's call it 2 years. Okay? So how much? So he reaches into a pocket. So how much do I have to pay in order to redeem my land? I only have to pay 2 shekel and 2 pundayon. Good. Rashi says, no, we're not going to do it. Meaning, if we're rounding up and it's going to hurt the Beis HaMikdash, it's going to hurt the Gizbar, we don't round up. But rather, what do? We keep it a year and a half. What is keeping it a year and a half going to do now? It's going to mean that in order for me to redeem it, I have to pay 50 shkalim. You don't get giraon. You don't get a reduction. Okay? So in other words, as far as counting the months are concerned, in terms of years remaining, generally speaking, whatever is going to be a windfall to the Beis HaMikdash, so those months are either included or discounted. Okay. We start off with the Gemara. Remenu makdishin bein lefnei yovel bein la'acha yovel v'shnasei yovel atzma lo yaktish v'imhiktish eina kedusha. Okay. So the Gemara says, here's the problem. Our Mishnah opened up by saying that you're not to be makdish a property less than 2 years before yovel. That's what the Mishnah says. On the other hand, we have a braisa, and the braisa says, the year after Yovel, the year before Yovel, you can be Makdish land whenever you want. Okay, so, not on the Yovel year itself, which we'll talk about later on this morning, but before or after, you can be Makdish. So, Rav Shmuel, Damri Tavayu, Ein Makdishin, Ligael, Bigerua, Pachas, Mishteshanim, the Kevin, the Ein Makdishin, Ligael, Bigerua, Pachas, Mishteshanim, Yehe Adam Chas, Al Nechas, Va'al Yitash, Pachas, Mishteshanim. Rav and Shmuel say, you know what the Pshat in the Mishnah is? It basically is like this. The Mishnah is there to be our advisor. Meaning the Mishnah is just not just telling us halacha, but the Mishnah is going to be our financial advisor. And basically what the Mishnah says like this. You want a really bad idea? I'll give you a really bad idea. Why don't you be makdish your land within 2 years of Yovel? Okay? Terrible idea. Why? Because now you want to redeem that land. Remember, if you don't redeem that land, you lose it forever. So you want to redeem that land, but here there's no prorating. Here, in order to redeem the land, you need to pay 50 shkalim in order to redeem it. Okay? And meanwhile, right, what just happened? The Beis HaMikdash had the land for not a year, right? Not 2 years. And meanwhile, 50 shkalim. So, when the Mishnah says, Ein makdishin lefnei yovel, it's not telling us a halacha that you can't do it. What the Mishnah is telling us is you shouldn't do it. Don't do it because you're going to end up paying 50 shkalim. If you are makdish the land 3, 4, 5 years before Yovel, and then you want to redeem it back, so good. So we're going to prorate a shekel and a pundayon for every year. But once you're within 2 years, it's just not a good idea. That's the pshat in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is Eitza Tova. Okay, Itmar. Hamakdish adeo b'shnasa Yovel atzma. Okay? Good. We're talking now about the consecration of a field. Consecration of a field now, as we have established, can be done any time between the first year of the Yovel cycle all the way to the 49th year of the Yovel cycle, okay? And in terms of redeeming the land, we now understand that there's going to be a difference whether you're redeeming it in the beginning of the Yovel cycle all the way up to 2 years before Yovel. Anything before 2 years of Yovel, anything less than that, I should say, is you're going to also have a chance of redeeming, but at a non-prorated rate. Right.
And then Yovel is 50.
Yovel is the 50th
year. So when it says not 2 years prior to.
Meaning if you're
48 and 49?
Yeah, so if you're sanctifying your land in year 48 or year 49, so now when you buy back, when you redeem your land from Hekdesh, you'll be buying it back at a non-prorated rate. Okay. Now, allow us now to discuss, this is the main topic for today. What if you sanctify your land in the Yovel year? Rav Amar Kedusha v'nosin chamishim, Ushmul Amar Eina Kedusha kol Iker. Okay, so our position is your land will have sanctity. Okay, in other words, the Hekdesh works. It works, and in order to buy back your land now, you're going to have to pay 50 shkalim. It'd be, according to Rav, almost no different than you being Makdish land in year 49. It'd be the same. In other words, it's Kadosh, it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, and in order to buy it back, you're going to have to buy it back at 50. And Shmuel says, no, ain't a Kedusha called Ikar, it just simply doesn't have Kedusha altogether. Okay. Take a look at Rashi over here. Rav Shmuel, Dami Tavayu, ain't Makdish land, go, I'm sorry, No, I'm sorry. Let's go on in the Gemara. Bishlam aleinyan mechira de paluk shmuala de rav ikalamem kava chomer. Look, selling a land in the Yovel year, not being makdish land, but selling a land in the Yovel year. So there, we're going to see again another machlokus between Rav and Shmuel. But the Gemara says, but over there, I understand. Uma mechura kvar yotze achshav sheina mechura eino din shalotim makir. Look. You can make a really simple argument. What happens in Yovel? Land goes free. Land returns to its owner. So at least over there, you can understand, you hear Shmuel's position that it's just simply not a sale in the Yovel year. And the argument is, it's a kal vachomer, it's a very simple one. If the land's returning to me in the Yovel year, so you can only imagine that the sale doesn't register during the Yovel year. Okay? But that's sale. Okay, but we're not talking about sale. Meaning that our first discussion in this world of properties about being makdish. Now, simple question. What happens to land that you're makdish? It doesn't come back to you. If you don't redeem land that you're makdish, it doesn't come back to you. So you just lost that entire argument. Meaning the argument of a sale is, if it rebounds and comes back to you in the 50th year, you can only imagine that if you try to sell in the 50th year, it's just simply no sale. But that argument doesn't work by hekdesh. When you're makdish a property, it doesn't rebound to you in the 50th year. It stays with Hekdesh, i.e., it goes to the Kohanim after year 50. So now that you lose your Kal Vachomer, so essentially what the Gemara wants to know is, yes, yeah, so how is Shmuel going to argue here? How is Shmuel going to argue his case that if you are Makdish a land during the 50th year, it's not Kadosh? Oh, I could have looked right here. Right, Rav Yehuda says that the Kohanim pay for it. I'm sorry, good. So if that's true, so now, where's Shmuel? So the Gemara says, Shmuel k'Rabbi Shimon Sirilei, d'amar nechnasim v'lo nosnin. So the Gemara says, well, what we can do is we can align Shmuel together with Rabbi Shimon. Now, yeah, I'm not sure about that. In other words, if he's makdish it in that 50th year, okay, it sounds like he's lost it.
Okay, he cannot redeem it.
It sounds that way. Well, let's just take this step by step. Shmuel k'Rabbi Shimon Sfirlei da'amar nechnasim v'lo nosnin. So the Shmuel says, okay, look, I'm going to hold like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that Kohanim come in and Kohanim don't need to pay for it. Okay, so which means then that it automatically leaves in the Yovel year. Okay? So what you can do, according to Shmuel, is still apply your Kal V'Chomer. And the Kal V'Chomer would sound something like this, that if it automatically leaves Kedusha in the 50th year, i.e. going to the Kohanim, so if you try to be Malkish in the 50th year, the Kedusha doesn't take place. Okay. So again now, basic, and Virav, sorry, let's just read one more line of Gemara, Virav Sefer, Sof Sof, Labalim, Mi Kahadre. So Rav will argue, look, I agree with you, it goes to the Kohanim. And I agree with you, according to Rabbi Shimon, the Kohanim don't even have to pay for it. But when all is said and done, does it go back to the owner? The answer is no. It goes to the Kohanim. So Kohanim udenafka, the Kohanim ishochan gavo kazachu. And the Kohanim aren't earning it. They're not acquiring it. They're just simply assuming the role of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, but really the truth of the matter is, it's Kadosh, it is sanctified. Okay. So again now, the discussion for today is going to be basically the following. What if a Makdish land in the 50th year? What happens at that point in time? We know what happens anywhere between year 1 and year 49, but now in the 50th year itself, so again, Machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, Rav says it's Kadosh and you need to give 50 Shkalim, and Shmuel says it's just simply not Kadosh at all. Okay, now, my taima, the Rav. Okay, so let's start off with the position of Rav. Oh, that's my issue. Okay. Now I'm clear about where I was. I was looking in Bahar. Yeah. And I needed to be in Bechukosai. Okay, I apologize. Now I'm back, so to say.
27:17.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right. Here we are now. The Parshas Bahar is all about the sale of land. Parshas Bechukosai is all about the sanctification of land. Okay. V'im hamakdish yigal. Okay, Mishnah Seyova, yakdish adeo kercha yakum. V'im achra yova yakdish adehu. Okay, sorry, let's back up one pasuk. V'im isdechu zaso yakdish. If a person sanctifies his ancestral property, ish la'ashem v'ya erkecha lefi zar'o, zerach ha'masarim, v'chamishim shekel kesef. Good. The Gemara says, let's now analyze Rav's position. Im mishnas Hayovel. What does the pasuk say in describing? It says, from the Yovel year. Ushnas Hayovel Bechlal, including the Yovel year. Shmuel miksiv v'im bishnas Hayovel, mishnas Hayovel ksiv. Shmuel's argument, counter-argument, is very simple. Read the pasuk even more carefully. The pasuk doesn't say bishnas Hayovel, it says mishnas Hayovel. Mishnas she'achra Yovel. Bisham l'rab haynu dechsiv im mishnas Hayovel. V'im achar hayova. Now the Gemara says, look, it's true, but in deference to Rav, if you read the Pesukim, Yudzayin Yudches back to back, Rav seems correct, right? Allow me to read. Pasuk Yudzayin, im mishnas hayova yakdish adeo kerchecha yakum. So if you are sanctifying the land, now I know it says mishnas hayova, but let's translate that as in the Yovel year. Why would I want to translate it that way? Because look at the next pasuk. V'im achar hayovel yakdish adeo. And if the year after the yovel, you want to sanctify your land. Okay? So in other words, pasuk yitzayin, pasuk yitches, one seems to be talking about the yovel year itself, and the next one's talking about the year after the yovel. Good. That works beautifully for Rav. So Elo Shmuel, my achar hayovel, achar. Okay? So what Shmuel will do is like this. Shmuel will tell you, pasuk yitzayin, the year after Yovel. Pasuk Yud Ches, the year after that. Why? But in other words, why? Why would we want to do that? But it's very simple. Meaning, let's defend Shmuel for just one more moment. Because at the year after Yovel, that's the maximum that you'd be paying. Meaning, that's 50 Shkalim. Any year after that, prorated. Of course, until you get to less than 2 years, where, once again, we lose the prorated. But at least you understand the difference between being Makdash Field in year one of the Yovel cycle versus any subsequent year. Meisvei. The Gemara is going to challenge. Makdishim ben lefnei Yovel ben lachar Yovel v'shasa Yovel atzma lo yakdish v'im hikdish in the Kedusha. Okay? If you're Makdash land in Yovel year, it does not have Kedusha. That's difficult because Rav says it does have Kedusha. It is a bit difficult. So the Gemara says, okay, well, I'll tell you what Pshat is in the Braisa. Pshat in the Braisa is that when the Braisa says Eina Kadosh, it means that it's not sanctified vis-a-vis prorating. Meaning it's sanctified vis-a-vis, you got to pay the full 50 shkalim. So the Gemara says, oh, I'm not so excited about that pshat. Mechlal, delefnei yova kedusha ligal b'geruwa. The Gemara says, well, but that makes it sound like that if you're makdish to the land any other time, including the year before Yovel, it's prorated. But we know that's not true. It's the first point we made in the Gemara, that when you're makdish a land less than 2 years before Yovel, it's not prorated. You have to pay 50 shkalim. So Amalar Chavrav, Hamani Rabbanan hi, V'ana da'amri kerebi, da'amar rishon rishon bechlal, Shvi, Shvi'i Bechlal. So the Gemara says in defense of Rav, look, that price is going like the Chachamim. I subscribe to Rebbe. Rebbe says, Ad v'ad Bechlal. Hachanami Bishnas Vishnas Hayovel Bechlal. I subscribe to the view of Rebbe, which is basically Ad v'ad Bechlal. So Bishnas means, or I should say rather, Mishnas means from the Yovel year, including the Yovel year. I karebi pundayon mai avidate. So the Gemara says, okay. In other words, if now we're saying advad bechlal, so let's do a little bit of our number crunching. How do we prorate? So we prorated based on the number of years to Yovel. Okay, good. According to Rebbe, advad bechlal, which means that we include the Yovel year. Okay. Now, we had a problem because we were assuming that you prorate based on from year 1 to 49, and we had to divide that into 50 shkalim. So what we did is that each year represented a shekel plus one pundayon. According to Rebbe, once it's ad v'ad bechlal, so how are you prorating? What's the schedule? Schedule is going to be 50 years. 50 years divided by 50 shkalim, it should be one shekel per year. Good. Perfect. Hold it. You're right there. So the Gemara says, and we know for a fact, we have a brisa that says that Rebbe says that when you schedule and you prorate the land, you prorate it at one shekel and one pundayon per year. So, question's very simple. You already know the answer. If Rebbe says ad v'ad bechlal, and we're having Rav subscribe to the position of Rebbe. And so that means that it's from year 1 to 50, including year 1, including year 50. So how did you walk away with a prorated schedule of one shekel and one pundayon per year, but Rebbe Karebi Huda Sfirulay? Answer is that we're going to align the positions of Rebbe and Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda holds that it's not a 50-year cycle. It's a 49-year cycle, because Yovel is two things. Yovel is the 50th year, and Yovel is the first year of the next cycle. So good. So it is ad v'ad bechlal, but the entire cycle is made up of only 49 years. Good. Now, once you put Rebbe together with Rebbe Yehuda's position, now you understand, correct. It includes first year and last year. It includes the full cycle, but the cycle is only 49 years. So, Svir Le Dama, Shana Chamisha, Mola Lekan, Lekan. Good. That's the position now of Rav. Filled out, in order to get to Rav's position, we're going to say two things. We're going to say that, number one, Rav holds like Rebbe, ad v'ad bechlal. So that means that if you're makdish a land in the 50th year is part of the whole cycle. We're also going to say that he subscribes to Rav Yehuda, which is that that it's only, even though Yovel's the 50th year, it's only a 49-year cycle. How so? Because it also represents the first year of the next cycle. Okay. Leima Rebbe Karabanan Sfirulei. Okay. Now, as far as Rebbe's concerned, let's assume that Rebbe's going like the Chachamim. The Ika Rebbe Yehuda Selo Shte Pundayon Ribayele. So, Akach Lishmuel Rebbe Karabanan Sfirulei. So the Gemara says, yeah, according to Shmuel, Rebbe has to hold like the Chachamim. Right? Because Rebbe, again, we know for a fact that he holds that the schedule, the prorated rate is one check on one Pundayon. So, how does he arrive at that? He must hold like the Chachamim. According to Shmuel, he must hold like the Chachamim. Because remember, Shmuel doesn't count the Yovel year. The Yovel year is totally out of the discussion. So, how do you get to one shekel plus one pundayon? It's got to be that he holds like the Chachamim, that it's 50 full years. So that means that because you're lopping off the Yovel year, so that gets us to 49 years. Had it been 48 years, it would have been one shekel and two pundayon. So it's got to be that Rebbe holds like the Chachamim. Okay, we'll pause over here. Okay, we have a little bit more I wanted to do. Stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. All right. So starts the seventh parak of Erchim.